Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. Glad you're tuning in with us.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join in the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/themusicrowshow and chat alongside with us.
Yeah, you can also find us on Twitter at The Music Row Show. And then after the show, you can find some great pictures at on Instagram at The Music Row Show. And just
everywhere.
Yeah, I know, everywhere. And you know where else we are? Just in case you haven't heard, we're on Dish now. Blue Highways is now being carried on Dish.
That's right. We've been on TV now for like 3 years, but that's in a true. Fairly small area. But now Dish has picked us up. We're in about 22 million homes on 4 times a week on channel 73. And for the first time right here in Nashville.
That is so true.
Yeah.
So, Scott, before we get too out of hand here, why don't you introduce this gentleman sitting here with us tonight?
Absolutely. It has been a wild ride for tonight's guest, from studying voice at University of Wisconsin, leading Wisconsin rock bands, to playing musicals off and on Broadway, to become one of TV's biggest stars, 6 country albums, 4 standards albums, more Broadway success, a Tony nomination.
Two.
Thank you. He and his longtime buddy and TV cousin, John Schneider, have recorded the ultimate Christmas present for Dukes of Hazzard and music fans everywhere, Home for Christmas. It's available right now. Known around the world as Luke Duke, it's a big deal for us to say, Tom Wolpert, we're glad you're here, and welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah. Thank you. Woo! Thank you.
That was a long intro. I'm sorry we're out of time, but thanks so much for coming.
You did a really good job. I feel totally impressed. And it's not my first time in this room either. I've been in here before.
Oh, sweet.
Really?
Sure. All right. Well, growing up, was your career ambitions, were they more musical, more acting? What was, both, or was it accounting?
I started doing musicals when I was like 12.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was always kind of the brunt of things. I started singing when I was, I don't know, as soon as I could talk, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And singing in front of people from, you know, 4 or 5 years old.
Sure.
So it was always something that was, I had a real comfort level with singing. The acting part of it came later, basically because I was doing, you know, musicals, sure. Stage musicals. So in self-defense, I had to learn how to act a little bit.
And yeah.
Whatever talent I had was soon sucked away when I started working with John Schneider. So
now, I see where this is going.
No, he's my best friend. He's a great buddy of mine, and we've been best friends for almost 40 years now.
That's pretty awesome. Awesome.
Well, we'll talk about how far into the filming of Dukes of Hazzard do you and John realize that you both have musical ties?
Oh,
and,
way before that. I mean, the first day we met, we sang together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you met each other before the series.
Oh, yeah. Before we got cast.
Right.
He had already been pretty much chosen by them at Warner Brothers, and he'd mm-hmm. been staying out there in Burbank for about 6 weeks, and they had pretty much everybody else in the cast set. And then I read in New York City. They flew me out on a Wednesday, and we did a screen test on Friday, and 10 days later, we were shooting in Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. We shot 5 shows in Georgia. From October until the middle of December, and then we moved to L.A. in January of 79, and that's where we did the rest of the 7
okay.
years.
They just kind of made it look like, sort of.
Yeah. Okay.
So was
there
music...
palm trees in Georgia?
It happens. Yeah. Southern Georgia.
Yeah.
Was music a part of the bonding process for you two then?
Oh, it always was. And we sang together in the car from the get-go.
Really?
And, yeah. And... you know, he had done some musical comedy in high school, and I mean, he was basically just out of high school. He was 18 years
old. Oh, yeah,
he
lied about his age, right?
Whatever. That's his story to tell. But I had just been on Broadway in a show called I Love My Wife the summer of 78, and then got cast in, you know, October of 78 to do mm-hmm. the Dukes thing.
Wow. So... on any TV show, a lot of people might know that there's a lot of sitting around and waiting between shots. You know, there's a lot of waiting.
Right.
How much music filled up that time for you guys? Were you sitting around jamming? Any other musical cast members?
Not a lot of jamming so much as like when we'd sit in the car, we'd sing together and do stuff like that.
You mean the car?
The car,
yes. The car,
okay. Yes. Well, you see, a lot of those shots where we're driving, we're basically sitting on a soundstage,
right,
and they're, you know, shooting dust past us and waving a branch over it to look like a shadow. And but the music was always a real basic part of things.
Were there any other musical cast members that would join in with things with you?
Not in particular. No? I mean, Ben likes to play and sing a little bit. Mm-hmm. Ben Jones, Cooter. But other than that, not really. Okay. Catherine will sing with us once in a while, but...
okay.
Love her.
Yeah,
love
gotcha.
Her.
Enough said.
So actors dream of landing a hit show just like songwriters dream of, you know, getting that first hit cut. And the odds are about as infinitesimal for each, you know, in reality, when you look at them, as many actors and songwriters. At what point do you guys realize, A, you have a hit on your hands, and then what point do you realize this is bigger than just a hit show?
The hit part came quick. I mean, as soon as we debuted, what was it, January 29th of 79, it was top 20 immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you got to remember, back then it was just three stations, basically.
Right, right.
The PBS guys, they weren't looking for ratings.
No.
So,
they still aren't.
It was just the three of us, and it was an immediate hit. I think probably about the second or third year we realized that it was really going to be, you know, have some staying power and actually, you know, to really turn into something. And of course, again, John was 18 years old, so he had never experienced any real failure at anything. So it was pretty amazing. It was a pretty amazing ride. And one of the things now, you know, 38, 39 years later, is that, you know, the people still... It's become iconic.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
So each following generation kind of picks it up on its own. And we've had, you know, I mean, we were signing autographs today over at Wizard World, and we had a bunch of kids in there, 7, 8 years old, and they've been watching the show. It's remarkable. And and there's no way that you can ever foretell anything like that kind of success. That's
right.
Just, you know, that's serendipity.
Well, you mentioned a second ago that John hadn't experienced any failure because of his young age. What kind of failures had you experienced in your early
career?
Not
anything
in
particular. I'd been pretty fortunate.
Had you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I studied voice at the University of Wisconsin, and then I spent a couple years in a summer stock theater in Michigan that I actually just went back to about a month ago.
Oh, no
kidding. Did a show. Yeah, the Barn Theater in Michigan.
Does it look the same? Is it?
Oh, it's exactly the same.
Wow.
I mean, it's a dairy barn that never had cows in it. And it's been a theater for 60 years.
Nice.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a truly amazing place. And I spent 2 summers there and then came to New York, and I had some pretty good bona fides. You know, I actually had some pretty good connections, and got an agent right away and got a Broadway show within 6 months. I was the lead in a Broadway show, which is unheard of, too.
Wow.
So that first year was insane. 78, I was... all of a sudden, the lead in a Broadway show, and then later that year, working on a TV series. So,
and I have to ask, and I promise you, we're going to talk more music than anything else. But I'm just this fascinates me. So you're from Wisconsin, you're in New York, and hey, we want you to read for this show, and John was from New York as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but he'd just spent like 6 or 8 years in Sandy Springs. Right near Atlanta.
Okay, okay.
Because
yeah, I was just
mother moved down there.
I watched your guys' screen test this week, and
man, you're a glutton for punishment. Yeah.
Well, I was getting a kick out of the Southern accents, you know.
Oh, it was a stinker. If you listen to that show, everybody on it had a different accent.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Denver's from out west, and Jimmy's from Kentucky, I think. Sorrow is the only one who probably did any real homework as far as accents go, and he could tell you, you know, what county you're from.
Yeah,
he was amazing and a super intelligent guy. But
you
know,
you get,
it was
when
what
you
it
get
was.
The read for this. When you get the read for this, you're thinking. I mean, were you thinking, oh man, I want to jump on this? Or
no, what I thought was, you know, I mean, it was an opportunity to have a job, and then when I got cast, I thought, well, first of all, I was scared to death because I'd never really done television.
Mm-hmm.
I was comfortable on stage, but that's kind of the opposite of television.
Completely. In what way?
Well, on stage, you know, everything's a little larger than life.
You have to project.
You have to project, yeah. and visually, you know, you're projecting as well. I mean, you can still do subtle stuff on stage, but it's nothing like in front of a camera. In front of a camera, everything is so condensed, and it's so focused in on you that the smallest kind of movement you make or difference in volume and stuff, it's just magnified. So basically, on stage, you're bigger than life. On television, you're smaller than life in your acting. You can be extremely subtle. And
very easy to overdo it.
Oh, my gosh. That, you think? Yeah. Did we ever? Oh, of course.
No, no. I wasn't saying that. No,
we had a blast. And it was a learning experience. And I basically thought, you know, we got hired, and it was 5 episodes. So I thought, you know, I'm going to make a quick so many $1,000 and head back to New York and get a nicer apartment, you know?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's basically what I thought.
Yeah.
But then once it started happening, it happened quick.
Sweet. Well, the Dukes of Hazzard soundtrack album came out a couple years into the whole thing. You had a song on there.
Well, it wasn't really a soundtrack. It was everybody got involved in a track or two. I mean, even I think Jimmy Best did one, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if Sorrel did, but there's definitely a couple of Waylon's things on there.
Yeah.
And I think Cripple Creek was
up
on that.
You did up on Cripple Creek.
Yeah.
So at what point was putting out music something that you were thinking about, or was it like the studio
pretty
people
quick,
trying to
pretty quick, but
you?
Actually John got hooked up first.
Did he?
Yeah. He got hooked up with the Scotty Brothers and had a hit with It's Now or Never. He covered the Elvis tune.
I remember that.
Yeah. And he did a nice job. I mean, for a 20-year-old.
Yeah. Not like what you would have done, but
it's,
you know,
it's apples and oranges. We have different styles and we have a totally different, education as far as music goes. So he had some success pretty early on, and then, you know, I guess I got my first deal in probably the second or third year at Dukes.
Okay.
But I never had the success that he had. But that's okay. I mean, it was a different thing again. And then once I started doing Annie Get Your Gun on Broadway in 99, they asked me if I wanted to do a Sinatra-ish record. So I started doing standards, and that's like, it's like putting on a well-worn shoe. Mm-hmm. This stuff is really comfortable for me, and we've really found a niche, I think, vocally and performance-wise.
Is it, so you said it's home for you. Is mostly what you grew up listening
to? Well, no, not so much of that. But, I mean, you got to remember back in the day, back in the 40s and 50s mm-hmm. and stuff, a lot of the top 40 was Broadway tunes.
Right.
And so that's really what that made up a large part of the American songbook. Mm-hmm. And when I'm doing, say, Annie Get Your Gun, that's Irving Berlin. And out of those tunes, there was probably 8 number ones.
Man.
On the charts.
Yeah. Sure.
Back in the 40s. It came out in 46. And it had the most number ones of any musical ever.
I didn't know that.
That's the truth.
Wow.
You heard it here.
Right here. Look at this. We're learning things.
Jeez, be careful.
It hurts a little bit.
Be careful.
Actually.
No kidding. hey, listen, this segment is brought to you by our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs. Haino and I are both Toyota drivers. They're good people there. We're big fans of theirs.
Did they comp you?
No.
Oh, wow.
No.
What the heck?
It just means that's...
At least get a truck out of it.
We tried.
Think?
But no, they're good people. And even though we don't get a truck, we still say nice things about them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they still pay it for the thing,
they're good,
right?
Guys. Yeah, they make that. The whole experience.
Okay, they're a sponsor for that.
But even before they were a sponsor, I went there because it was so comfortable, you know, whether it was a car repair or having to buy a new car. The whole process with them is unlike any other dealership.
I know. Is that Finnish?
It is originally, yeah. But my dad's from Germany. I'm named after him. But George is the name of the owner over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Wow. So good.
And he's the guy you should talk to when you go visit right there. And you can find him online at Toyota of Cool Springs. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of Tom Wopat here on the Music Row Show. So come on back.
It's frightening.
I had such a great time on that trip, honey. I've never been there all these years. Mm.
We just came back from a lovely trip along the Milky Way. We stopped off at the North Pole to spend a holiday.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
We called on dear old Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is coming back to town.
Coming
to town.
Yeah.
We're here with Tom Wopat, and that's his brand new Christmas project he did with John Schneider.
That's Schneider singing
right there. But that's Tom Wopat talking. And the album's called Home for Christmas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I finally talked John into coming to New York, and I think he spent a total of 3 days there cutting his tracks.
Uh-huh.
And then we spent about a month putting it all together. And,
okay.
It was a lot of fun, actually.
So you fixing know, all his singing on the track took a month? Oh.
Am I going to say something like that? No. But, you know, I mean, there is a lot of magic you can do. And yeah. But I was really happy with... Well, it's true.
Pro Tools is a wonderful thing.
Pro Tools, yeah.
I'll tell you what.
I mean, listen to all that tune stuff that you hear, you know, in the hip-hop and stuff.
Sure.
I mean, the whole track is tuned. I mean, that's they're using that as a tool.
Right.
They're using that as an instrument.
They're tools, all right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't buy it. I don't care for it much myself. But I was really, really happy with how this came out musically.
Yeah.
I knew it would be good. I knew it would be fun. But I didn't know how good it would be, and I didn't know how much fun it would be. Mm. And what we did, too, was while he and I were in the booth together, I had the engineer just record everything, and the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so after we had all the tracks cut and mixed, he gave me a CD of all the talk. And I went through there, and
okay.
I picked about a half a dozen things. So there's that, like the blurb at the top of that song.
Sure.
That's not one of them. There's a bunch of stuff that's just by itself.
I listened to it earlier. Actually, the album starts out with one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. It adds a certain color to it, and it definitely shows off our relationship, which is unique.
Awesome.
So you're a child of the Beatles. And well, singing show tunes.
I mean, not literally.
Well, no.
But I mean, they came along when I was a teenager.
Right.
You know, I was 13 in 64.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I mean, at that time, you listened to radio and you might hear Frank Sinatra and you might hear Elvis and the Beatles and the Beach Boys.
And George and Jones.
Sure. Yeah. Ray Charles. All of them on the same channel, you know, mm-hmm. all of them on the same radio station. So... You know, you kind of got exposed to all of that. And I was milking cows for 8 years, so we got to listen to the radio a lot.
Well, that and show tunes. I guess the question is, what are the odds that you record six country albums or however many, had there not been a Dukes of Hazzard?
Probably not a lot.
Okay.
But also at that time, you got to remember.
Urban Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy changed everything.
Hmm.
All of a sudden, country music was M.O.R.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you had all that stuff, Mickey Gilley and even
Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, and all those guys. It was pop music. It was country pop, kind of. And if James Taylor had come along then, he might have been a country singer.
Mm-hmm.
Or Linda Ronstadt, same thing. Eagles, maybe.
Right.
You never know. But then, so that was really what was kind of available at the time. And it was something that was an easy in. And...
they're good CDs. I've been listening to them
bad.
All week.
There's
a lot of good songs in there.
There's some good records, and I worked with great producers, Jerry Crutchfield and Rick Hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really good people. And I really enjoyed working with the songwriters in town as well.
Mm.
It really helped me gain some confidence in what I was doing writing-wise.
Talk about that. In what way?
Well, you know, I mean, it's easy to be in the room when something's written. But if you have an idea that all of a sudden comes to fruition with other people's help, you're saying, okay, so my ideas have, you know, they're valid. And
mm-hmm.
and I found that as well, you know, when I started, I directed a few Dukes of Hazzard episodes and I've directed on stage and stuff. So the ideas that I have as a writer and a director are valid. And I still write. I don't write a whole heck of a lot. I'll play a tune that I wrote here in just a little bit.
Yeah,
oh, great.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, when you people who know you and knew you before all the Dukes of Hazzard success knew about your musical background and your talents and everything. So how hard was it for you to overcome the whole, oh, here comes another actor who thinks
he
can sing thing? You
it
know,
never with, goes away, really.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, there's still people who will say, gosh, I didn't know you sang.
Huh.
And, you know, I've been... singing all my life.
Right, right.
But that's okay. Yeah, that's the way the business is.
How about within the industry?
Within the industry, I'm known as a singer, I think. I'm accepted as a singer.
Okay.
Not bad.
Okay.
And especially since I'd already done Broadway musical.
Yeah.
That gives you a certain amount of bona fides just like that. But the thing about Dukes was that it gave you no credibility either as an actor or a singer. So, you know, but at the same time... Dukes giveth and Dukes taketh.
That must be a weird position to be in, to be on a hit that everybody loves, yet as an actor you were saying that you didn't feel like it gave you credibility.
You know, the thing, as far as I'm concerned, is I've always tried to be gracious and grateful for the breaks that I've had.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if I want something else, if I want to be taken seriously as an actor, I'll take a small role in Glengarry Glen Ross, the mm-hmm. Mammoth play on mm-hmm. Broadway with Alan Alda and, you know, and those guys, the big dogs. And it's a small part. He's the one who gets suckered. Mm-hmm. It's, Jonathan Pryce played it in the movie.
Right.
But I did that part, and all the people in town that came to see it, they didn't even know it was me. Because wow. it's so different than what I'd done before. I was always a leading man before.
Right.
So that kind of thing, all of a sudden now I have some credibility as an actor. Now Tarantino will call up and say, hey, you want to try out for a part? And so I got cast in Django in a part. And it's as a singer, what I've done, you know, once we did the first jazz album, I said, well, I dig it. I get it. But I don't really want to do it with a record company anymore. Because I never see anything.
Right.
And so I've been making the last few records by myself. I mean, I'm the producer. I put the bread out. But I've also made money on every record I've made.
That's a nice change. So,
you know, you learn. And it's also, I've learned a lot more about production. I've learned more about how to sing. And it's, so I figure as long as you're learning and as long as you're doing stuff that you like, I mean, how bad can that be?
Awesome. Well, we'd love to hear you play some. You feel like doing a tune for us?
Yeah, it's getting a little late in the evening, but I'm going to give you a shot off. This is off a record called Consider It Swung.
Consider It Swung.
And this is a tune called Thailand Sea. Now, Thailand Sea I wrote while I was in Thailand. And the reason I was in Thailand is because I was deemed the only appropriate American actor to play the lead in the film about the radioactive ants.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So
I can see that.
So I'm there doing the hive.
Right.
The hive sucks. I mean, the hive is B at best, probably a C film. Wow. But it was, you know, they paid me some money, and they put me up in this beautiful hotel. I'm on the 12th floor. I got a full-on suite and mountains outside the window and the Thailand Sea out there. And, you know, they have the, you know what longboats are?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
On the Thailand Sea, they have these, like, 40-foot wooden boats. And instead of having a little outboard on the back, they got like a 400-horsepower Chrysler, a V8 that's on a hinge. So the kid lights up his cigarette and drops the prop into the water, and this boat goes pew, across the ocean. It's amazing. Song has nothing to do with any of that. The longboat split the morning sun. She was running to or away from someone. Not a tear in her eye or a cloud in the sky. The deed was done. There on the shore of the Thailand Sea, the glare from the bay had rendered him blind. So try as he may, no boat could he find. I'm gonna yodel a little. She had stolen his heart, now they were far apart. Love is unkind. So he stands alone on the shores of the Thailand Sea. Who knows if it's true, this tale we've been told. But they say these two mountains are the lovers of old. At the edge of the night, in the fading sunlight, they turn to gold. Together they stand on the shores of the Thailand Sea. Forever they stand on the shores of the Thailand Sea.
Yeah. 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 All right. Woo. Nice. Oh, wow.
The Wopat Special.
The Wopat Special. Like that.
Interesting. You were just saying, we were talking a little bit about how the, we need to get a guitar stand for this guy.
Yeah. Okay.
It's on the floor. It's good. It's,
all right. Just how you were saying, you know, it was hard to get credit for acting doing the TV show. But the other side of that is the fan base that has adored you for all these years and I would imagine follows a big part of your music as well.
It doesn't translate.
You don't think?
Really?
Much. I mean, country maybe. The country music a little bit, but mm-hmm. not jazz. They don't. It's not crossbred very much.
Okay.
Interesting.
But it's okay. I mean, I've still been playing some really cool stuff, and I've, you know, sung at Carnegie Hall and sung in the Opry and sung at Lambeau Field.
Nice.
Now Packers, we're talking.
You betcha.
Well, we actually just got a Facebook question from listener Edwin, and he's asking about your jazz project and you were working on, and wants to know if it ever got completed and if he can, where he can buy it.
Well, you can go to TomWopat.com. You can buy all of it, I reckon.
There you go.
I got, several I've got like your
all
number.
Of it, like the whole thing?
There's I've Got Your Number, which is the most recent one. The one before that's Consider It Swung.
Uh-huh.
There's one called, I can't even think of what that...
That's a long title.
Exactly. No, there's a Harold Arlen record from 2005.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we'll look it up here. We'll go to TomWopat.com, which all of our listeners can do that as well.
And, of course, there's the Schneider record, the Christmas record, which is really cool. And we got great players on all of them.
Yeah.
They all swing.
Well, we got some time.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because the overall feel of the Christmas album definitely is very jazzy.
Right.
What went into the decision to go with that style for the Christmas album?
Well, because that's what I've been doing.
Okay.
Mostly, and the players I play with are jazz players, and so the arrangements are pretty much that. Mm-hmm. John Otto did arrangements for Rosie Clooney for about 20 years.
Wow.
He's a terrific arranger. Ted Firth is a really fine young arranger in town, and then Rob Mounsey did a couple of arrangements on the record, and he actually arranged some of the Steely Dan stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, we have you know in New York City you get what you pay for.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great musicians and arrangers and composers and everything.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because that's not a subject that we talk about on the show very much, and that's
What's that?
Concept of arranging, what an arranger
oh,
does,
geez,
what you bring to an arranger, and then
the
what
world.
They do for you.
Yeah, you know, like a guy like John Otto will take an American Songbook song and give it a treatment that's fresh,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds and for musicians, the guys, especially like the horn players and bass players and piano players, they hear the stuff and it's hip and it's up to
yeah.
date.
So they come up with all the different parts for
yeah,
all the
yeah.
different musicians.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's arrangers for all these country records too.
Well,
they don't
but
come out of the.
It's a lot more improvised than you
it's
would
different.
Think.
They have the charts. You know, they give them
yeah,
the charts.
Where do the charts come from?
The producer will chart it out, but then the players are putting their own
the
well,
chart
I've
stuff
done that
on it.
Too.
Yeah,
done
yeah,
that too. But
sure,
an arranger. I mean, if you're gonna have 15 strings and half a dozen horns, you're not gonna want to try and figure out the parts while you're sitting.
They're
there.
Not all improvising something
no,
together. Yeah,
you're gonna right. do one day one session,
yeah.
one day with the strings and one day with the horns.
Right, right.
And you better have your T's
your
crossed
stuff,
and
yeah.
your eyes dotted.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a different.
Well,
type of
it,
recording
you know,
than you do
both
here.
Ways. And I've also done, you know, a lot of, did a lot of demos here in town that were an awful lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'd work with somebody like John Willis, who's a guitar player, and we'd come up with several different parts, and we'd make a heck of a demo. You know, sometimes the demos are better than what you end up with.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Let's take a break. Let's We're going to be back with more of Tom Wopat. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
How come you have your wallet out?
I was thinking about getting you something for Christmas.
No, 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 don't.
Don't go spending a lot of money on me, Tom.
Maybe a onesie? I wear a 44 long. No boots.
I really can't stay.
But Johnny, it's cold outside.
No, I gotta go away.
It's really coming down out there.
Yes, this evening has been.
Was hoping you'd drop
so
in.
So very nice.
You brought the beer and it's on
my
ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Come All on. All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Tom Wopat, and that's him singing with John Schneider, doing Johnny It's Cold Outside.
A little bromance number.
Brand new Christmas project they got called Home for Christmas, and that's, of course, Johnny It's Cold Outside. A whole new take on that song.
Has that ever been done with two guys? I've never heard it.
I have no idea.
So who came up with that idea? And obviously there's some changes in the lyrics.
I guess I'll take. Yeah,
you,
Yeah, I did all the rewrites too.
Nice.
You know, it was fun. It's a lot of fun live too. We have a good time with it.
That's great.
It's funny. I mean, that's, you know, at first, because my wife was playing it earlier today. My wife was hearing it from the next room, and at first she's like, "What's that?" You know, within a few seconds, she was in the room with me laughing. So she loved
good.
It. It was good.
Good.
That's good. Home run on that one. Yeah.
That's our goal.
So what I know we talked about it briefly, but you said, you know, you got John in for 3 days, but talk about the idea of doing this Christmas album and what how did it take shape
for
you?
I've been wanting to do something with him for a long time, and we've done concerts together for 20 years.
Oh yeah.
I long time ago, when I had a band, when he quit the country music thing, we would start every now and then. We would do something together, and I would bring him in, and so we did some of those shows together. And once we had done a couple of shows together, it made sense to make a record. And since you're going to make a record, you may as well make a Christmas record, because then it's an annual, perennial. And we lucked out. I mean, this stuff came together great, and we got great players, and we had a blast making it, and we've had a really good time doing the stuff live.
That's terrific.
Love that. Well, one of my other favorite songs on the project is Blue Xmas. That's a great tune.
Yeah,
very
that's
funny
one of my
as
solo
well.
Tunes.
Talk about that tune. And
You know, that's a tough tune. It's really dark. It's really sarcastic.
It is, but snappy.
And cynical. Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's a great song. Trying to think. Is that a Bob Dureau tune? That is.
I don't know.
I think so.
Okay.
I think it's Bob Dureau. And he's really, really clever, and it's like Blue Xmas. I hope you have a good one, but for me, it's Blue Xmas. It's really cynical, it's dark, but it's really cool. And what they do is actually, you have it in that tempo, and then it breaks down into halftime from that. And you have this kind of rap thing for the verses. So it tells a really dark story, but it's kind of like George Carlin on acid doing a Christmas song.
Perfect.
Which how bad could that be?
No, it's perfect. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's hilarious.
Well, listen, we got some time. You mentioned you took certain parts to, you know, go ahead and get some respect and some credibility as an actor. And for my kids, anyway, your work on Phineas and Ferb, I think, really just kind of
outdid that. That was fun.
One of their favorite. Actually, I love that show too. Believe it or not, because
I believe it.
You know, it's actually very funny.
cartoons. It's right up your. Okay.
Yeah. What goes? Well, it's very kind of got some adult humor
right.
in there. What goes into getting into character and doing a performance when you're just looking at a page and a mic in front of you and you don't have, you know, other actors and things to.
It is what it is. I mean, you know, we've had enough experience when you've been doing it as long as I have that you have a certain number of set characters that you can fall into at the drop of a hat. Mm. And those guys are, they're yokels. So, I mean, that really makes it easy. And, you know, that kind of stuff is so much fun. It's amazing.
Well, okay, I'm going to take this another way. As far as recording music, what's the difference to you between recording a vocal and recording a performance?
Oh, well, if I'm going to do a vocal, I want it to be a performance. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, but I think a lot of people, that's exactly what I was getting at. If you're going to sing, you want it to be a recording of a performance. You don't want it something where you're chopping it up and getting every
note
perfect. Making
it perfect.
Oh, well, perfection is overrated. I think any songwriter will tell you that you're looking for that certain thing that makes the song come to life and it makes it accessible to a listener. And a lot of, you know, perfect singing is inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I think, you know, as far as a good case is John and myself, I think he's probably got a better voice than I do. But I think I might be a better interpreter of song than he is. Hmm. Just because I do it a lot more than he does anymore.
Sure. Right.
So, and I write a lot more than he does. So it's just one of those things that you find, and a producer, a good producer, is the guy who'll come in there and say, look, you know, forget about that particular part of things that you do. Let's focus on this and figure out exactly how to make the most of this and make it just as accessible to listeners as possible. And that's when you end up coming out of a vocal and you're going, wow, did that? That's pretty good. I can live with that. And, you know, and they're in there tuning notes and stuff,
yeah.
And that's going to happen.
Sure.
But if you really have hooked the emotion of the tune and really sold the tune, there was a song I did just recently in New York by a writer. Oh, gosh, what is his name? He's going to be so mad. John. And John, that helps.
Oh, yeah. John. Oh, John. Yeah, John from New York. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he owes me 20.
He had a really big album about 20 years ago, 15 years ago. And so he was just doing this thing where he was having people perform the songs mm-hmm. in a club there called 54 Below, the old Studio 54, but downstairs.
Okay, downstairs.
So I'm singing one of his songs, and there were about three people that came up to him afterwards and said, I never really understood what that song was about until I heard it tonight.
Wow.
So that's kind of what you're going for.
Yeah.
You're going for taking a song and making it accessible to people.
Awesome. Listen, that's awesome. Listen, we're going to take one last break, but we're going to come back with more of Tom Wopat, and I think we're going to try to twist his arm during the break, see if he can do another song for us. So you come on back to the Music Row Show in just a few minutes.
No cares for me, I'm happy as I can be. I've learned to love and to live, devil may care.
You wish.
No cares.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Whatever comes later goes.
That, of course, is Devil May Care. Tom Wopat singing that.
I wish
I could.
You just want to have a cigarette.
I know.
And a skinny tie.
A martini.
Yeah. I need a drink right now.
Extra dirty.
Just exactly. Well, anyway, that's off his album called I've Got Your Number.
I've Got Your Number. This is his newest standard swinging album. And you can get all of his albums, including this one and the new Christmas album with John Schneider by going to tomwopat.com.
There you go. And he's going to do us another song. What do you feel like playing for us?
This is a song by a guy named Buddy Munlock, who I think was from town here.
Okay.
And it's a song that I heard on a David Wilcox record.
Oh, so. I love him. Yeah.
I'm the kid who ran away with the circus. Now I'm watering elephants. But I sometimes lie awake in the sawdust, dreaming that I'm in a suit of light. Late at night in the empty big top, I'm all alone on the high wire. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no net this time. He's the real death defier. I'm the kid who Thought we'd one day be lovers. Always held out that time would tell. Time was talking. I guess I just wasn't listening. That's no surprise if you know me well. As we're walking down toward the train station, I hear the whispering rainfall. We cross the boulevard. You put your hand in mine. In the distance, the train's last call. I'm the kid who has this habit of dreaming. Sometimes it gets me in trouble too. But the truth is, I could no more stop dreaming than I could make them all come true.
Party?
Yeah.
I skip a verse when I do it, so apologies to Buddy, but I love that song.
Very nice.
It's The Kid, it's called.
Well, talk about your songwriting. How do you feel like it's evolved over the years, and where do you think you've gotten your most craft knowledge from?
Well, I definitely picked up the most here in town, working with guys like Rick Bowles and... oh, gosh, who was the other guy I worked with there a lot? It's been a while.
It has been.
And it just a lot of really good songwriters in town that I worked with. And I think that I've gotten more sophisticated. I think what I've tried to do in the last 5 or 10 years is focus in on more iconoclastic kind of emotion. Like I've written a song called Flying. Mm-hmm. It's in the end credits of a film that I just did last year called Fair Haven.
Okay,
it's an independent film. It'll be coming out this year sometime, or early next year, and it's a really cool song about emotion, and it's another one that I should play for you, but I can't. So. I think what I try to do is tap the deepest stuff that I can feel and then try and put it in words that people can relate to. I mean, that's what every songwriter does.
Sure.
I mean, there are some songs that are just more fun than others.
Sure.
But at this point, you know, I mean, I'm 64, so I look for some deeper stuff and trying to find things that are a little more universal. And it's been an interesting ride, but it's something that I've always taken pride in.
So how much, when you're writing, how much of an eye towards commerciality do you think about at all? None at all? Okay.
I mean, I've never really had a song do much. I guess I had a top five song once, a Earl Thomas Conley thing called The Shadow of a Doubt.
Okay.
I wrote with Rick, and I can't not remember his name, and I should be shot, the other writer. But, you know, I think... I write things that I can really feel.
Okay.
You know, like I would have loved to have written that song, The Kid.
Right.
You know, that's a really beautiful and evocative song. So, you know, I find things that interest me, and I find grooves that interest me, and, you know, I do with what I can. I'm not prolific. I don't write a lot.
Okay.
But I very much enjoy it.
So you would consider yourself more of an inspiration writer rather than an appointment writer?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's not like I'm making money off it.
Okay.
Yeah. I suppose I could.
Neither are we. So.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of songwriters. There's a lot of great songwriters in this town, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
There's no shortage. Again, tomwopat.com. We got just another minute or two here. What were your ideas of musical success as a teenager, milking cows, and what would that kid think of all the experiences and music that you've been part of over the years?
Well, you know, I mean, I was listening to horn bands back then, and mm-hmm. that's really what I had in Wisconsin. I was a lead singer in a horn band called Skyway.
Okay.
And that was a blast. That was a lot of fun. I think... you know, I grew up listening to like Andy Williams and, you know, uh-huh. some of the, you know, Moon River was one yeah. of my first favorite songs.
Yeah.
It's a very evocative tune. So, I mean, I think I wanted to be the Beatles mm-hmm. or the Beach Boys. And then later on, I wanted to be Steely Dan or Pink Floyd. And I'm none of those, but I get to sing. I get to sing in front of people. People pay to hear me sing, and they also buy records and. You know, I get to do what I like and I get paid for it. What's wrong with that?
Not a thing.
There's nothing wrong with that. Well, speaking of, let's give your website a shout out one more time where you can buy some of this fabulous
Tom
music.
TomWopat.com, I reckon. I think that's what it's called.
TomWopat.com is the place to do it.
All right.
I'm good. Guessing you can also go to iTunes and, all the usual places, Amazon. Yeah. But TomWopat.com, that's probably the best place. Also to find out where you're playing. And
exactly.
Yeah, you and John are hitting the road doing some Christmas tours. So.
Well, we got a little thing. We're going to do something down in his hometown, down in Holden, where he lives down in Louisiana now. And then we got one in Florida. And I'm going to do something back in Wisconsin on the 20th of December. But sweet. I got a few more I'm going to come up with.
Nice. All right.
I like to play here in town somewhere.
Well, thanks for joining us. Go to themusicrowshow.com. Check us out. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week on The Music Row Show.
And that's a big yeehaw. Good night. Strong heart.